Hey everyone, before we get into the turkey and potatoes of this week's episode, I want to let you know that this week's episode is being brought to you by Pain Outside the Box. Pain Outside the Box is a coaching and educational venture on TMS and neuroplastic pain. Miriam Gauci Bongiovanni, who is today's guest, is the founder and is a coach and a mind-body practitioner who offers personalized one-on-one coaching as well as a self-paced virtual programs designed to get people out of chronic pain. Her latest program, Pain-Free Breakthrough, is a transformational training consisting of videos, readings, meditations, and other tools aimed at chronic pain recovery. The program will get you to implement TMS knowledge into practice, and it includes an editable workbook where you'll be able to journal, track your progress, and do the inner work. Check out our website right now at www.painoutsidethebox.com. It is Tuesday, November the 23rd. My name is Eddie Lindenstein. I'm the host of the Mind and Fitness Podcast, the number one TMS podcast in the world. I mean, maybe. I don't know. before we get too far into today's episode, I want to give a shout out to all the patrons of the podcast. Go to patreon.com/ The Minded Fitness Podcast, if you'd like to contribute, make a monthly contribution. There's all different sorts of levels, $5, $8, $25, all the way up to $50. So variety of different amounts that you can use to support the podcast, and every little bit helps. So shout out to Dominic, Sasha, Sylvie, James, John, Brooke, Jason, Colette, Mindy, Irina, Kelly, Tony, Francisco, Michael, Victoria, Anthony, Jen, and Nate, Christina, Ross, Julie, Brian, Arnie, and Barb. Thank you all so much for continuing to support the podcast month after month. I really appreciate your generosity and your support. So before the theme song, you heard the ad for Miriam Gauci Bongiovanni and Pain Outside the Box. Miriam is actually back for her second appearance on the show. And when I was going back and looking and listening to our first episode we did together, my assumption, I thought that this was just something I did a couple of months ago. But it was all the way back in January of 2021, which is really wild that it's been almost a year since her and I recorded our first episode. So today, we focused on a few things, but a large part, a large section, and really the tone of this overall episode is going to be on focusing on attitude. Mary made a really interesting comment that a lot of people simply don't have the attitude to recover. And it sounds sort of harsh, but we really get into what that means. And I think it's really, really fascinating. I think she's totally right. Overall, like when different experts in the field talk about this stuff and people that struggle through it and they can't find a solution, a lot of times the reasoning that we can really push on that is people simply aren't ready, and they'll start to get better once they're ready. And to me, that's really what Miriam is talking about. The other thing that I wanted to focus on is something that I mentioned in last week's episode, and I got an email about it. So let me read this email I got. I have a random question for you. I was listening to your latest podcast, and you mentioned two sides of the coin, the TMS side and the neuroplastic pain side. I wonder, do you know anything about this split? So essentially what I was talking about was some people basically fall on one side of the fence or the other. They either say that John Sarno's theory of oxygen deprivation is correct, or they say that Alan Gordon's theory of neuroplastic pain is correct. And to me, they're exactly the same thing. And I think that a lot of people will get hung up on one or the other. Is it, what's the mechanism of pain? What is the reason for it? Or physiologically, what is happening? Is it that there is oxygen debt to the muscles, or is it that there is basically neural pathways that have been built and then reinforced over time through conditioning and other sorts of things? And to me, it doesn't really matter, because you have the exact same thing. The reason that those first two things even began was because the nervous system is in fight or flight. So it doesn't really matter which one it is that you believe, because the reason that it occurred was exactly the same thing, regardless of which theory it is that you perhaps subscribe to. So I just wanted to make sure that I threw that out, especially because I got a question about it. But without further ado, if you're in the United States, happy Thanksgiving to you this week. It's a short week, which is why this podcast is airing a day or two early, is because I wanted to make sure that I got it out there ahead of the holiday. And if you're traveling, you'll have something to listen to at the airport or on the drive or whatever the case is, or out on your walk, which is usually when I listen to podcasts. But without further ado, here is the returning and the sponsoring Miriam Gauci Bongiovanni. Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein. It's Thanksgiving week if you're in the United States and you're hearing this podcast a couple of days early. But I am so excited because I'm having a returning guest. It felt like it's been about 3 or 4 months, but then when I went and looked, it's actually been almost a year. But Miriam Gauci Bongiovanni is on the line from Malta. Is that how you pronounce it?
Malta.
Malta. Okay, cool. Yeah. Awesome. Well, so you're back. How's 2021 been? We did the interview literally the first week of the year. So how's the year been treating you?
Yeah. Yes. It's, first of all, thanks for having me back. 2021 has been a great learning experience. I mean, back last year, I had just kind of started my coaching business, or rather I had just started taking it seriously.
Yeah.
Because before it was just like a blog, and I had been blogging about pain, chronic pain, TMS. But last year I took it further. It's been a great learning experience, you know, coaching clients, learning from them as well. You know, figuring out what works best, what doesn't. So yeah, it's been good.
What I'm always curious. This is something that I think about a lot, but I don't exactly know how to explain it. And you just hit the nail on the head. When you talk about learning from your clients, maybe what are a couple of things that you can give examples of? Because I'm sure, you know, now you have 11 months of work in this particular topic from the last time that we spoke. So what are some of the things that you've picked up from your clients?
Okay, so something in particular that I've been noticing lately is that there's a lot of knowledge now out there. So there are a lot of people who come to me who already know a great deal about TMS, neuroplastic pain, how it all works, and they know deep down that this is what they've got. Yep. And they've read so many books, and perhaps they've done a lot of journaling, a lot of meditations. But what I noticed that a lot of people need a lot of help with is actually the mindset, because a lot of people are actually fighting the pain. And when you're trying to fight something, when you're in a battle, that's also triggering the fight or flight response, right?
Yep.
So I guess a lot of us are familiar with that. So when we're in fight, we're actually getting more stressed. And it's not really the ideal attitude to approach anything, but especially chronic pain recovery.
Yep. Yeah. And we're going to go into a little bit. That's going to sort of be the main course of today. But if you're interested in going back and listening, because this will sort of spill in and kind of be a part two or maybe even a part 1A from our last conversation back in January. But I went back and I re-listened to the interview when I was walking the kids to school, and then went and walked my dog. I had an opportunity to re-listen to it. And there were three things that were talked about in that I just want to maybe get some further clarification on. One of the things that you had said... this was also something that came up, as a question for my podcast a couple of days ago, but, we were basically talking about this conflict of believing that you have TMS, but then doing things that are not necessarily in line with that. As an example, you read the books, or you believe that TMS is the cause of your pain, but you're still doing a lot of stretches. I'm just sort of curious on how do you resolve that conflict? Cause that's something that I don't really have better advice for somebody other than to say, stop doing stretches with that with the intent of solving your pain. Is there anything more than that you feel can be added?
Yeah, that's a big one. That's a big one. And that's another common stumbling block, unfortunately. I mean, one way of resolving it is you have to learn the right information. So already learning how chronic pain is generated and that it works differently to pain from an injury, for example, even though sometimes it might feel similar.
Yeah.
So if you've been doing all these stretches, all the physical therapy that usually works for an injury, but it's not working for your pain, that's already kind of a red flag, right?
Yep.
So I guess, you know, getting clear on how this works And then it's a matter of, you know, being super aware of your own habits and behaviors. So on the one hand, if you're thinking like, okay, this is TMS, this is psychological, there's nothing wrong with my ankle, for example, but you're constantly avoiding certain movements or you're avoiding twisting it in certain ways. So there's a conflict, right? So there are actually two beliefs there. The belief that there's nothing wrong, it's just TMS, and the belief that, oh, maybe if I do this, it's dangerous. Right. And at the end of the day, it's all about deactivating that danger signal, because you want to feel and believe that there's no threat in whatever you're doing.
Yep.
There's no basis for that threat, right?
Yeah.
Because somehow your brain still thinks that there's a threat. And that's the problem, because then pain is a danger signal. And that's why then you actually get pain automatically when you do something which you believe is dangerous.
Right, right. So it really, it just comes down to the intent. We talked a little bit about yoga in the last, like me doing yoga for pain relief versus me doing yoga as a performance strength athlete.
The intent, yeah, that's a key word actually. So thanks for reminding me. So yes, I mean, it's doing whatever you're doing with the intention, for example, to increase flexibility, that's fine. But not with the intention of fixing a structural problem, because there's a conflict there if you think that it's also TMS.
Yep. Definitely. Yeah. Well, that's good. Getting a little bit more on that. The other thing that, so this also came up a couple of days ago as I was doing doing the podcast, but it's something that we sort of grazed over, but it's the concept of like somebody being in a situation that they feel like they can't get out of, meaning like they're in a career or a job they feel stuck at or a relationship or things like that, like the things that they perceive are continuing or perpetuating their stress. How is it that they can reconcile that and get out of pain? What would you say to somebody in that situation?
First of all, when someone has already kind of identified the source of the frustration and anger, which might have led to the symptoms, if the symptoms continue, he or she might be blaming this job or the situation for causing the pain. I mean, it's maybe true that it caused the pain because, you know, increased stress or increased frustration can lead to increased pain perception.
Yep.
But I think it doesn't help to keep on blaming the situation for the pain.
Yeah.
Because then it becomes like almost similar to blaming an activity for causing the pain, like running or sitting down for some people, right? So I think it's important to watch, you know, what you're believing. If you're believing that your job is going to cause you pain, then it's more likely that it will.
Expectation.
Yeah. Very important.
Yeah.
I guess. Then I still believe, Eddie, that there's always a way. Eventually things will change. There's always, almost always a way out. And this is another thing that a lot of people, when they're, you know, in despair, they think there's absolutely no way out of a frustrating or problematic situation. But if we get out of fear mode, sometimes we can already kind of start to think of, you know, what can we do to maybe change things a little bit?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be a radical change. It can be just like a lifestyle tweak, for example.
Right. Yeah. 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 Certainly. You know, the final thing, so you had talked about, and maybe this is going to bleed into sort of the main topic of today, but you were talking about self-talk, and I thought it was interesting. You were basically speaking about when you have pain coming on, that you talk to the pain like a misbehaving child, which I've heard people say stuff like that before, but I haven't had the opportunity to ask them, hey, what do you mean? And then if you're willing to give us an example, like say you're sitting there right now, your back or your neck or whatever, your sciatica is acting up again. Mm-hmm. If you don't mind giving us an example of what it is that you're saying inside of your head or inside of your brain, what do you do?
Okay. And more than just saying how you're feeling when you're saying it as well. Okay. So let's say, I've been hit by pain right now. I'd go like, oh, come on. You know, don't make such a fuss. Don't be stupid. I mean, if you want to hang around, that's fine. I'm just still going to go on with whatever I'm doing. I'm not too bothered, but you don't really have to be here, you know. And if you notice my tone of voice, it's not overly defensive. It's not overly upset.
Yeah.
And this is why I compare it to talking to a misbehaving child, because you still kind of love the child. You don't want to get rid of the child completely. I mean, I know you would want to get rid of the pain completely, so it's not exactly the same.
Right.
But what I mean is the attitude. You don't speak to a child as if feeling upset and offended. I mean, you might, but that's not the right way. You know, we speak to a child to kind of make sense, help him or her see some sense, and that you're not too bothered deep down. And that's the idea, not to feel too bothered and upset deep down at the pain. Because yeah, the more upset you are, the more intense it's going to get. So it's all about, again, yes, the attitude with which you speak.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, good. I'm glad that I got through those, because those were things that as I was listening to them, I was thinking, oh, what would Miriam, if we could extend this, what would she say? So that's good.
There is another kind of thing that I would say sometimes, and that would be talking very strongly, not as if I was talking to a child, but more as if I was rejecting something, like an idea, like the idea of pain. So you're having a catastrophic thought. I would say to myself, oh, just, you know, off. You can use swear words and any powerful word that makes you feel like you're rejecting it.
Yeah.
So that's another way, you know, to speak persuasively to your pain.
Almost like selling it.
Gives you a sense of power, yeah.
You're making a sales pitch. Yeah. A lot of this conversation is going to revolve around, and we'll kind of see how it evolves. But before I hit record, you had said that, you know, sort of the main thing to focus on for this episode, which I am in agreement with, is focusing on really the attitude, because people don't have the attitude to recover, which is a really interesting statement. Elaborate on that a little bit. What do you mean by that?
Okay, so I see a great difference, and sometimes the first time I speak to a client, I already know how fast he or she is going to recover from the way they feel. Because I can see someone who's feeling extremely helpless, and I can see someone else who's feeling very interested. Maybe he's just read something about DMS on my website or somewhere else. So there's a really big difference between someone who comes in doing the work feeling extremely fascinated by the mind-body connection, really yep, interested in what's happening to him, as opposed to someone who has tried something already, but is feeling extremely helpless, like a victim
yep,
to his symptoms. And that's a very dark place to be in. And when someone's in that state, it doesn't matter how much work they put in. In fact, it can even have the opposite effect, because when they keep on trying and trying and seeing it's not working, then they're cultivating more helplessness and desperation. And that's not the mindset to be in.
So give me an example. I set up a call with you. Give me an example of somebody maybe on each side of the coin. So somebody that has kind of a little bit more, like somebody that you would say, this person's going to have a rough go. Like, what do they walk in saying to you?
Okay, so first of all, I can see from their face that they're feeling extremely down mm-hmm. and helpless. That's okay. I mean, we've all been there. And then they would say something like, oh, I feel like I've tried everything. I've done this, I've done that, I've listened to that, I've followed that program. So the story goes like, I've tried everything and didn't work. And usually also they go back to a negative experience.
Yep.
So when I was doing this, the pain was really bad and that was terrible. So they keep also recalling the past a lot. So from that position, they can't actually think or imagine an alternative. And I think one of the fundamentals is to actually be open to the possibility of your pain reducing or being eliminated. You know, so yeah, that's an example of, you know, being in a dark place, that sense of helplessness, like, what am I going to do now? And feeling extremely sorry for oneself,
Do you find yourself, like when you have these people that you're, you know, that you're working with in that sense, that kind of have that a little bit defeatist attitude almost, I mean, do you have kind of a forceful tone with them in that regard, like kind of almost like setting them straight? Or do you take a little bit more of a slow coddling approach? Like, how do you perceive that for yourself?
It's more like of a self-awareness based approach. You know, I sometimes if I see they've been doing a lot, first of all, I make them aware that they're in this attitude of victim or this attitude of fight. I'm trying to fight the pain. I'm trying to get rid of it. I'm trying this. So first of all, I just tell them to kind of let go. We sometimes practice a meditation together just aimed at letting go, sometimes even pretending that they have given up on the fight temporarily.
Yep.
And it's not to say give up on becoming pain-free, but it's more to help them cultivate this attitude of, okay, I'm going to let go for today. For today, I'm not going to be pain-free. That's okay. I'm going to stop thinking, you know, what I should be doing next. Because that's mentally exhausting.
Yeah.
When you keep thinking and wondering, what can I do next? What can I do next to get better? That's not the right state to be in. So sometimes you have to actually take a step back and let go.
The thing that comes to mind for me personally is that when I was like at my deepest of deep in pain, every single night was me research. Like I would literally be laying in bed and I have my iPhone in my hand and I'm researching what could this be. And then ultimately when you're reading what could this be, there's a solution at the bottom of the page or a certain doctor to go see or something like that. And then I'd find a local doctor. So I'd go to sleep with all of this hope that, hey, I'm going to call this doctor's office in the morning and I'm going to get an appointment with them and then everything's going to be solved. And so you kind of have this to be continued every single time, right? I go to sleep just knowing that the doctor I'm going to call tomorrow is going to solve all my problems. And then I call that doctor, I make the appointment, I wait a month before before I can actually get in to see them. And then the problem's not solved and just kind of going over and over. And that's kind of what that makes me think of when you talk about that.
Yeah, I guess we've all been there, right? I mean, it's a cycle of hope and disappointment. And disappointment is a big thing. And it's especially more difficult when someone has already recovered or felt better and then the pain comes back.
Yep.
That's even harder actually to deal with than the first time you get pain, because then there's more disappointment that it's returned.
Yeah. 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 Once you, if you're working with somebody and, you know, they kind of have like an attitude, like initially have an attitude of just kind of helplessness or fear around, is this going to be the solution for me? I mean, does it seem to take a while to get them to kind of snap out of it? I mean, what sort of, I guess, guidance can you give them or do you give them along the way that helps them kind of get in a little bit better state of mind versus somebody that maybe walks in and maybe they have a little bit better chance at having more of a quick recovery?
Okay, so, I mean, as I said previously, I make them aware that they're in fight. So the initial focus has to be about letting go of that fight, right? So yes, the process might be slower. So I actually ask them to do less, not more. Whereas someone who walks in, who's curious, and I know that, I know that he can progress further, they might get more kind of tasks and challenges. But for someone who feels helpless, who feels he's tried so many things and they didn't work, it's all about first trying to calm down the nervous system and cultivate a calmer state of mind, basically. And also maybe some self-talk exercises, as I explained, so that they can start feeling a little bit more confident, a little bit more powerful.
Yeah, 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 yeah. The theme of power, it's interesting, is I've had different doctors, therapists, coaches that have come on and talked about really this topic entirely, meaning TMS or chronic pain. Power seems to be this topic that keeps coming back. I keep hearing the word over and over again. Can you talk about the concept of power and sort of where it fits in and this?
I mean, when we feel empowered, it's the total opposite, right, of when we feel helpless. So when we feel empowered, there's also a good dose of confidence and self-belief. And if we're dealing with mind-body pain, if it's usually our catastrophic thoughts or our anxious thoughts and anticipatory anxiety that's causing the pain, then definitely feeling confident and powerful that you can win over these thoughts will definitely help, right?
Yep.
I have an analogy actually to make. I like to compare someone in pain to someone who's being bullied at school, let's say. And perhaps this someone who's being bullied at school, I mean, the more that his bullies see that he's getting upset, the more they will bully him because they're getting a reaction from him, right?
Yep.
But if this person suddenly decides not to react. Maybe he also decides to smile at his bullies, to shrug his shoulders. Then eventually they would have no more point of bullying him, maybe, because they're not getting the same reaction, right?
Yep.
It's pointless. So I like to make that same analogy with chronic pain. I mean, pain will not, when you're not no longer bothered, you're no longer upset, you the pain will automatically decrease because it's not working as it used to be. You're not hooked on it anymore.
Yeah. when somebody had written something to me and I was answering the questions on the podcast a couple of days ago, the conclusion that I had come to after I made an explanation about something was to no-sell it. And no-sell, so there's this concept of like ribbing or playing pranks on somebody, like in like joking pranks, like somebody that you like, but you're, you know, it's always you're playing around a lot of pranks or jokes on them. And perpetuating that is really the victim in this case selling it, like it bothers them and there's, you know, they get in a fit about it and things like that. But the number one way to get somebody to stop doing pranks on you or stop teasing you or whatever is to no sell it and show that it doesn't impact you. And that sounds like what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's exactly what I'm talking about. So yeah, could be this different scenario with friends as well. But when eventually, yeah, you get teased too much.
Right, the no sell.
You have to react differently. Otherwise, you're going to continue to get teased too much.
Yeah.
There's a reason why. And it's usually your reactions.
Yeah, that's I think that's a great concept. I feel like I could do an entire episode on that whole concept of, you know, no selling stuff like that. So it's interesting. Now, when we talked back in January, you were working on a particular project. You'd had an ebook come out. There was a particular program, and then of course you've been promoting this podcast for the last couple of weeks as a sponsor. What are you working on at this point in time? Is there anything specific, courses or anything like that specifically that you can talk about?
Yes, Eddie. I mean, last year I had just co-authored an ebook with another coach, Duncan Clark from Scotland. But then my goal for this year was to create something a little bit more interactive because not everyone is comfortable reading, you know, a 200-page ebook. So instead I created an online program. So it's on a separate course dashboard. Each lesson comes with videos, readings as well, but kind of simplified shorter sentences. And the readings are also recorded as audio, so people can also decide to listen. And as well, there's a workbook that's editable that people can download where they can do the tasks because each lesson comes with certain tasks, be it self-awareness tasks, challenges like mini challenges, mostly self-awareness and self-development tasks. And so they can download this workbook and they can write on it and track their progress. So it's a little bit more interactive, you know, and then there are also some bonus meditations as well, like somatic tracking, visualizations. So, yeah, it's a little bit more comprehensive, I would say, more intensive.
Yeah. If you were to, because you listed off a few of the different things that you would advise somebody to do, whether it's meditations or journaling in some cases. I know at least when we talked in January, you had said that if you're feeling really overwhelmed, you do journal, but it's not all that frequent that you do do it. A couple of really like your greatest hits or the things that you think are people that are listening right now that maybe want the first couple of things to do or the ones that kind of generally seem to work for most people the quickest. Which ones are they? Because there's so many different ones to pick, but what are maybe one or two of your favorites?
You mean as techniques
or
resources?
Yep. As techniques.
Okay. So I think, you know, the attitude work again and the self-talk, because eventually once you start to believe yourself and you cultivate this attitude of persuasion, if you can feel greater than your pain, so that's very important. The thought redirection, which is basically trying to catch your thoughts as early as possible. So if you're getting a fearful thought, you don't allow it to lead to another thought and another, and suddenly you're envisioning this worst case scenario for yourself, which eventually leads to a self-fulfilling prophecy. So I think that's very important to be super aware of what you're thinking, especially if you're challenging yourself, let's say with a physical activity, you know, watch your thoughts before, during, and after. because it could be like a small thought like, oh, maybe this is too much for me, or what if I get pain after? And that single thought can lead to more and more thoughts, and eventually to the pain itself as you start to expect it, and as you start to remember the last time you had the pain, because thoughts will also activate memories. So I would say, yeah, thought redirection, definitely number one technique to master.
And to be clear, when you talk about thoughts that sort of, you know, that eventually lead to like a worst case scenario, this is any thoughts, right? Any sort of fear. This isn't specific to pain. This could be your job sucks, or, but it could be anything, right?
Definitely. Because okay. Then there are other kind of thoughts which lead you to cultivate a very negative mindset.
Yep.
Like, and you know, like feeling like a victim and feeling stuck in a situation. So definitely. But for pain, especially if you're trying to eliminate pain or reduce it, definitely watch what you're thinking and watch your expectations even more.
Do you tend to notice like themes in, like, I know that Sarno has his, you know, his personality traits, you know, so that's been talked about in the books a lot, but I think that we're at a really unique time in human history with pandemic and unrest in so many different parts of the world. Are there certain traits that you identify in people, maybe even if they've even evolved in the last 11 months since the last time that we did an interview, but are there certain traits that you see as commonalities in people that seem to have symptoms, maybe more now than ever? Like, are there certain personality traits or characteristics that you've seen?
What comes to mind is, since Sarno wrote his books, obviously at that time we didn't have so much access to so many resources, but now we do. And there's so much information out there that I noticed that a lot of people get overwhelmed. So there's this trait of wanting to look for more and more information about your symptoms. So in that case, that's not helping. Maybe in the past, we didn't have, you know, so many resources, so much information, so we didn't resort to the internet every time.
Yeah.
But what happens now is people feel something, they Google it, they come across a negative diagnosis, or like it could be something serious. And that makes things worse, because they then envision that they might have something serious. Yeah. So that's definitely one of them. I would say doing too much, trying to do too much is a trait I notice a lot. And another one, which is very also more relevant to the pandemic, is that a lot of people have started to work from home. And I noticed that somehow people who are either working from home or have, or also who are business owners or tend to feel lonely in their jobs, they tend to be more prone to TMS pain.
Oh, interesting. What would you attribute that to?
I mean, when you're working from home, you don't have so much social interaction, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So that automatically increases the stress response. Because even if we're chatting to someone, to a colleague, even if it's just small talk, that really, really relaxes us. I mean, that is relaxing for our brain, even though we don't realize. So when we're going for long periods of time without having so much social interaction during the day as we're working, that certainly doesn't help. And we have more time as well to monitor our symptoms and to get obsessed about our symptoms.
Yeah,
that doesn't help. People who work from home, or people who are kind of lonely in their jobs as in entrepreneurs, business owners. Yeah.
It kind of brings up a broader question. So I'm probably currently my favorite social media platform is TikTok, mostly for it's the algorithm, the way that it's set up for me seems to largely be around dog and cat videos. for the most part, but there is, I do see a lot of videos of people, they're sort of they're acting out if their company made them come back to work after being remote for a year and a half, and how much anxiety they would have about doing that, and how they don't want to do that, and how pointless it is, and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, we can argue till the cows come home about the merits of remote work versus working in an office and if those are needed. But I do think it's a really interesting trend where, did working from home breed anxiety, or did anxiety was that something that already existed and just really kind of needed an outlet, which isolation was that? Are there certain ramifications that you see as we come out of the pandemic in the next year, hopefully a couple of years, whatever. Any sort of like residual impact that you see as it relates to isolation?
I mean, it depends. I mean, if people continue to work always from home or remotely, I mean, yeah, as I said, it does make you more prone to overthinking. Now, of course, you can seek balance in other ways and you can seek out other social activities. So that's all fine. So as a residual impact from that, I don't know. There could be increased anxiety with commuting, for example, and increased frustration if you are forced to go back to work when you can still work from home. So that's the other side to it. But I think as a residual impact from the pandemic, I foresee more the fear of illness itself rather than from the isolation.
Yeah. This has been great. Miriam, are there any like final thoughts that come to mind or anything that you want to leave us with today?
Yeah, I think if there's any message I want to impart is that if you're doing any kind of work to try and overcome your pain, also check in with how you're feeling while you're doing it. So let's say you're meditating for an hour, 30 minutes, but how are you really feeling about it? Are you kind of trusting the process of meditation, or do you feel like you're fighting it? You're doing it just to fight the pain. So just check in with whatever you're doing. It could be just reading a book on TMS, but how are you feeling about it? Is it curiosity, or is it like, oh, I desperately want to fix this?
Yeah.
And if you notice that you are like in a battle, just step back for a while and work on the mindset first, I would say.
Painoutsidethebox.com is where you can go if you're more interested in working with Miriam or even learning more about Miriam's story. Like I said, you can go back to listen to episode one of this. We've now got, I don't know, 100 minutes of content or so between the two episodes that you can go and check out. But thank you so much for coming back, Miriam. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back, Eddie.